Thank you. We're joined as usual by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning, Rhode Island.
And University of Rhode Island political science professor Maureen Moakley. Good morning, Maureen.
Good morning, everyone.
We're pleased to welcome back physician, educator, talk show host, and raconteur Pablo Rodriguez, who we should note is a member of our board here at Rhode Island Public Radio. Good to see you, Pablo.
Saludos, amigos.
State revenue is running more than $140 million ahead of earlier projections for the current and next fiscal years. This means the so-called Taylor Swift tax is history, and a bigger exemption on taxing Social Security benefits is likely. One of the biggest budget fights will be over Governor Gina Raimondo's attempt to sharply cut back Medicaid spending. Scott, how do you see this playing out?
Well, I think you're going to see the hospital and nursing home industries dig in pretty deep and try to somehow soften the blow of these rather large cuts in Medicaid. I really wish that she would put more money into the earned income tax credit, which she said she would, because if you look at elderly people, only about 9% of them are in poverty, whereas we know that more than 22% of the children in Rhode Island are being brought up in poverty. And I wish we could do something more as a state for working families rather than just cutting income taxes for people at the higher end of the Social Security and pension world.
Well, the governor has indicated that she might toss more money into the earned income tax credit. Maureen, how do you see this fight playing out over this additional revenue? Do you think it will go to investing in the economy, as the governor said is her hope, or do you think it'll be plugged into a one-time fixes?
Well, I think what's going to happen, particularly when it comes to the whole idea of reinventing Medicaid, I think the Speaker and the Governor and Elizabeth Roberts are on the same page, where they've talked about putting some funds to mitigate some of the immediate cuts. But they have been very clear that they're still committed to the shift in paradigm. So I think what they're willing to do is do something about, as we transition people, we have to pay more for people in Alzheimer's, with Alzheimer's disease in nursing homes. But I think that they'll use that money in the short term.
Pablo, as Scott said, the hospital and nursing home lobbies are forceful on Smith Hill. Do you think lawmakers will be able to withstand the move to reel back cuts in Medicaid spending?
They have some of the best paid lobbyists in town. We all know that. But outside of that, the fact is that Medicaid spending does create jobs. People completely ignore the fact that hospitals and nursing homes do employ people. Cuts to Medicaid necessarily will be taken on the employees of those institutions. So there is a cost to these kinds of cuts. It's not something that can just be fixed with a cut on the budget. Also, the it's very difficult to cut yourself into prosperity. And I would hope that as we are considering these cuts, as we are considering eliminating the Taylor Swift tax, which I think that it should still be implemented, we need to really invest in the things that are going to get us out of the later years, out of this deficit that is really, really very, very difficult to fix with this one-time fixes.
But don't you agree we have to do something about Medicaid spending?
It's a huge part of the budget.
No doubt. The idea of reinventing Medicaid is absolutely a fantastic idea. The problem is that you cannot move an aircraft carrier in 1 year. And this is a concept that requires many years and requires investment in order to reinvent Medicaid.
The House has passed several measures meant to discourage the misuse of campaign funds. One of these calls for candidates to supply the State Board of Elections with an annual bank statement to back up the details in their campaign finance reports. But less than one quarter of state lawmakers agreed to provide Channel 12 with redacted versions of these very same bank accounts. Pablo, has enough been done to discourage the misuse of campaign money?
No, not at all. And it's really a travesty that with all these cases of misuse of funds that we're seeing in the General Assembly, that it is time that we put teeth into this legislation and actually put fines and put penalties that really deter people from doing this. The fact that legislators don't even want to share this information that should be completely public and people should be demanding this from their legislatures is something that it's just besides me. And it makes me really, really mad, because these people are supposed to be accountable to the people that elect them.
Maureen, we saw a former House Speaker plead guilty to misusing more than $100,000 in campaign funds. We're not going to see more significant changes now, when will we see them?
Well, I think that we're moving in the right direction insofar as the separate accounts and the fact that the spending is a public record. I do agree with Pablo that at least they should be more transparent in the sense that if not immediately available, the bank statements immediately available to the public, routine and systematic auditing of these accounts should be done. Certainly, as far as the legislature is concerned, particularly when the Ethics Commission doesn't have any control over them, this is a place where we need to lean in a bit and have more transparency so that the voters can hold them accountable.
Well, the General Assembly hasn't shown any interest in encouraging the Board of Elections to do those kind of audits. So, Scott, are these measures that have been signed into law by Governor Raimondo basically just a fig leaf?
It looks to me like the Smith Hill gang, as Pablo indicated, is just not taking this problem seriously enough. If you look at the most recent frittata, we have Representative Joe Almeida, who was caught misusing $6,000 worth or so of campaign money for personal use, and yet he only got a $1,000 fine, and he pleaded guilty to a misdemeanor. That's not going to be a strong deterrent for our lawmakers. I just wish they would be a little, take this a little more seriously.
Let's stay here with Scott. The Paw Sox ownership continues to make their case for a new ballpark in Providence. Meanwhile, Holy Cross professor Victor Matheson spoke in Pawtucket this week, saying that the benefits of a ballpark are not justified by a big public subsidy. How do you see this playing out, Scott?
I think ballpark in downtown Providence would be absolutely fabulous if the price was right and the taxpayers weren't getting gouged.
What is the right price?
I don't know, maybe something of $40, $50 million instead of $120 million. Maybe there's a tax treaty that can be worked out. Maybe there can be, as we mentioned before, some kind of a ticket surcharge. So there's a user fee that could help either pay off the bonds or compensate the city of Providence for what we know will be an increase in the police cost and fire cost because of security and rescue runs and things like that. I think there is a way to work this out.
Pablo, what do you think the right amount approximately of public subsidy is that would be correct for a Providence ballpark?
I couldn't tell you the amount, but what I can tell you is that I'm building a building in Pawtucket for my office, and the bank is requiring me to put up a business plan that they can check and see how much money I'm putting in and how much money I'm getting out. If you want me to be your bank, if you want the state to be your bank, then I should be able to see the finances of this institution and see how much money are they putting in, how much money do they expect to gain, and let's do some sharing of those profits.
Yeah, what's their risk level? I think people do want to know.
Maureen, how do you expect Governor Raimondo to reconcile the desire to keep the Paw Sox with the public opposition post 38 studios for a big public subsidy?
This is a dance that's already been in play in the sense that they're going to come back with a much better offer. I mean, this is, they're setting up, they've indicated that that's what they're going to do. The one thing I do know is if they are going to continue to put the squeeze on Providence College, Brown University, RISD, because they're nonprofits and they are tax exempt in terms of property tax, and they're going to make them pay a fee. Why are we giving tax-free discounts, if you will, to a baseball consortium? I mean, if I were Mayor Alorsa, that would be the bottom line. You'd have to do that.
We're out of time, so we have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us on Political Roundtable. Scott.
Thank you.
Maureen.
Thank you.
And Pablo Rodriguez.
Gracias, amigos.
We're funded by you, our listeners, and by the Robertson Foundation, continuing the commitment of its founder, Stephen Hamblett, to honest government in Rhode Island through in-depth political coverage. And if you enjoyed the conversation, please visit our On Politics blog at rapr.org.
Major funding for Political Roundtable is provided by the Rhode Island Foundation, using philanthropy to move Rhode Island forward.